Hello and welcome to An Engineer's Journey Through the Book of Mormon. We explore the Book of Mormon with the assumption that science worked the same then as it does now and that the characters are real people with the same types of feelings and tendencies as you and me today. The views and opinions expressed here are strictly those of the narrator and should not be considered official interpretations in any way. And now An Engineer's Journey Through the Book of Mormon. Hello, and welcome back. Have you ever wondered why the prophet doesn't ever do something to prove that he's a prophet? What do you think the response would be? In today's video, which covers Helaman chapter 7 through 10, we find out because that's exactly what happens. In our last video, we discussed the Nephites' involvement in secret combinations and organized crime. The more part of the Nephites joined the secret band. By contrast, the Lamanites sought to eradicate Gadianton's robbers from among them. But before we begin, I have a trivia question that we'll answer at the end of the video. The protagonist of today's story is Nephi, the son of Helaman. But what happened to Nephi's brother Lehi? Did he leave the faith? Did he remain faithful? We'll find the answer to that question before the end of today's video. Now returning to Helaman 7. As I said in the beginning, before we finish today, Nephi is going to prove to the people that he's a prophet, and we'll see how they react. But first, we need to set the stage. If you'll remember, in our last video, Nephi traveled into the land northward to continue his mission among the Nephites. Perhaps he hoped to set them on a different trajectory, as he had done among the Lamanites with his brother Lehi. Helaman 7 begins by telling us that Nephi's mission to the Nephites in the land northward was a complete failure. Quote, they did reject all his words, insomuch that he could not stay among them. He returned home to Zarahemla to find the people there in an awful state, with the Gadianton robbers enforcing and upholding corruption at all levels, including the government. In addition to being the prophet, Nephi was apparently a somewhat prosperous man. He had a garden next to the highway leading to Zarahemla's main market, and just inside his garden gate, he had a tower adjacent to the highway. Why he had a tower is anyone's guess. Nephi was disappointed and heartbroken about the state of his fellow Nephites. Verse 6 tells us that his heart was swollen with sorrow within his breast, and he did exclaim in the agony of his soul, oh, that I could have had my days in the days when my father Nephi first came out of the land of Jerusalem, that I could have joyed with him in the promised land. Then were his people easy to be entreated, firm to keep the commandments of God, and slow to be led to do iniquity, and they were quick to hearken unto the words of the Lord. But Nephi didn't lament quietly in his bedroom or his closet. No. Instead, he did his lamenting loudly from the tower right next to the busy highway. Passers-by heard his mourning and lamentations and crying and told others. Word spread, and before long, a large crowd was gathered there by the tower. Verse 13, and it came to pass that he opened his mouth and said unto them, behold, why have ye gathered yourselves together, that I may tell you of your iniquities? The rest of the chapter is Nephi addressing his people's iniquities, but to describe it as a reprimand would miss the tone. Instead of being righteously indignant, Nephi's words indicate that he felt confused, heartbroken, and betrayed. Yea, how could you have given way to the enticing of him who is seeking to hurl away your souls down to an everlasting misery and endless woe? And then continuing, oh, how could you have forgotten your God in the very day that he has delivered you? And then he addressed the elephant in the living room. Yea, woe be unto you because of that great abomination which has come among you, and you have united yourselves unto it, yea, to that secret band which was established by Gadianton. The first rule of Gadianton's robbers is that you don't talk about Gadianton's robbers. Everyone knew that, but here Nephi was talking about them plainly from a tower in public. He warned that destruction would come upon them unless they repented. If they didn't change course, God would no longer protect them from their enemies as he had done historically. What intrigues me about that part of the prophecy that he would no longer protect them from their enemies is that most of the Lamanites, who had always been their enemies, had been converted and now righteous. So who are their enemies now? No matter. Continuing in chapter 8, Nephi was so direct in his condemnation of Gadianton's band, to which the more part of the Nephites belonged, that some of them became angry. There were some corrupt judges in the audience who demanded that the crowd seize Nephi so he could be condemned for his crimes. But the crowd was divided in their opinion. Some sided with the judges and wanted Nephi taken prisoner. In addition to, perhaps, being a little peeved that Nephi was openly discussing their secret society, they didn't want to believe that destruction was coming. They felt their city was invincible. Even though the city of Zarahemla had been under Lamanite control and occupation less than 10 years earlier, but participation in Gadianton's band had made several Nephites wealthy, and, to borrow a phrase from 2 Nephi 28:21, they had been pacified and lulled into carnal security, and were in complete denial of the peril of their situation. They were offended by Nephi's threats of destruction, saying, "We are powerful, and our city is great, therefore our enemies can have no power over us." Other people in the audience said to leave Nephi alone because he was speaking the truth. "He was a good man," they said. And they knew he was a prophet because otherwise he could not have known about their secret works. Overall, enough people sided with Nephi to keep the corrupt judges from seizing him then and there. But prophesying of destruction was only part of the message Nephi gave from his tower. He also, more importantly, wanted to restore them to a belief in Christ, the Son of God. And this is something that we see all throughout the Book of Mormon, as we've discussed here before. The people followed the law of Moses and believed in God, but they struggled with the concept of God's Son. Rather than believing in Christ, most of them seemed to believe in the traditional law of Moses, and they considered a belief in the coming Messiah to be blasphemy. And this seems strange to me. You would think that if everyone in the Promised Land descended from Lehi and Lehi taught of Christ, that would be the prevailing religion. How did they revert to the religion of the people in Jerusalem? Was it because they were basing their beliefs on the brass plates? Why were the Christians still in the minority? I'd welcome any thoughts or insights on that. I just don't know. But Nephi reminded his audience that Moses had saved his people from physical destruction by leading them out of Egypt, and at a later time, he raised up a serpent in the wilderness to heal anybody who had been snake-bitten. After teaching them about Moses, Nephi reminded the audience that Moses, who they believed in, had testified that the Son of God would come, and Moses was not alone in his testimony of the Son of God. Abraham and many who had preceded him had been called after the order of the Son of God. Subsequent prophets such as Zenos, Zenoch, Isaiah, and Isaiah testified of him. And he also spoke of Jeremiah. And Jeremiah in particular is noteworthy. Nephi tells that Jeremiah predicted the destruction of Israel. As he says in verse 21, "And now will you dispute that Jerusalem was destroyed? Will you say that the sons of Zedekiah were not slain, all except it were Mulek? Yea, and do ye not behold that the seed of Zedekiah are with us, and they were driven out of the land of Jerusalem?" He was referring to the people of Zarahemla, who were descendants of Mulek. But what Nephi was basically saying is that when someone makes a miraculous prophecy, such as the destruction of Jerusalem, that's evidence that they're a prophet, and you should take what they say seriously. So then, having established that Jeremiah was credible, because his prophecy had been fulfilled, he reminded the people that he also prophesied of the coming of Christ. And Nephi concluded by saying that the people had so many witnesses of Christ that the only way to deny them would be to lie. Listen to verse 24. You can hear his frustration. "And now, seeing ye know these things and cannot deny them, except ye shall lie, therefore in this ye have sinned, for ye have rejected all these things, notwithstanding so many evidences which ye have received. Yea, ye have received all things, both in heaven and all things which are in earth, as a witness that they are true." They had rejected the truth, Nephi said. And he had made the point that you should believe prophets who would make true prophecies. And then, so that they would believe that destruction was coming, Nephi made a prophecy of his own. Verse 27. Yea, behold, it, referring to everlasting destruction, is now at your doors. Yea, go ye in unto the judgment seat and search, and behold, your chief judge is murdered, and he lieth in his blood, and he hath been murdered by his brother, who seeketh to sit in the judgment seat. And behold, they both belong to your secret band, whose author is Gadianton, and the evil one, who seeketh to destroy the souls of men. Then we move to Helaman 9. And we also go back to the question that I asked at the beginning of this video. Why don't prophets do things to prove that they're prophets? What would the people's reaction be? Nephi, standing on his tower, had told the crowd that the chief judge was murdered by his own brother. 5 men were sent to investigate. And it came to pass that they ran in their might and came in unto the judgment seat, and behold, the chief judge had fallen to the earth and did lie in his blood. Prior to coming, these 5 men had not believed that Nephi was the prophet. Perhaps they thought he was just a cantankerous old man. But now, when they saw, they believed, and fear came upon them lest all the judgments which Nephi had spoken should come upon the people. Therefore they did quake and had fallen to the earth. The chief judge's brother, after killing the chief judge, had run out crying murder. He gathered a group of people, and they ran back to the throne room, and there they discovered the chief judge murdered, and 5 strange men by him on the ground. The people concluded that those 5 men had done it. And it came to pass that they laid hold on them and bound them and cast them into prison. And there was a proclamation sent abroad that the judge was slain and that the murderers had been taken and were cast into prison. The next day, at the chief judge's burial, the judges who had been at Nephi's garden wondered what happened to those 5 guys that they sent to investigate. And it came to pass that they inquired among the people, saying, "Where are the 5 who we sent to inquire concerning the chief judge, whether he was dead?" And they answered and said, "Concerning this 5 whom ye say you have sent, we know not, but there are 5 who are the murderers who we have cast into prison." The 5 men were put on trial, and they told what had happened, that Nephi had told them that the chief judge was killed, and they came and they found him. So how did the judges respond? Now it came to pass that the judges did expound the matter unto the people and did cry out against Nephi, saying, "Behold, we know that this Nephi must have agreed with someone to slay the judge, and then he might declare unto us that he might convert us unto his faith, that he might raise himself to be a great man, chosen of God and a prophet." Rather than believing that Nephi had made an accurate prophecy, they accused him of being complicit in the murder. So they caused that Nephi should be taken and bound and brought before the multitude, and they began to question him in divers ways that they might cross him, that they might accuse him to death. During the trial, Nephi gave detailed instructions to the judges on where to find the true murderer, where to find evidence, and how to obtain a confession from the murderer, the chief judge's brother. They followed his instructions, and the brother confessed. In addition to confessing, he said that Nephi was not involved, and that he could have known nothing about it unless it was through God's power. So the people had definitive proof that Nephi was a prophet. He had made a prophecy which had come true. He had made a prophecy about a big event that he could not have known about. And there were some of the Nephites who believed on the words of Nephi. And there were some also who believed because of the testimony of the 5, for they had been converted while they were in prison. And now there were some among the people who said that Nephi was a prophet. And there were others who said, "Behold, he is a god. For except he was a god, he could not know of all things. For behold, he has told us the thoughts of our hearts, and he has also told us things, and even he has brought unto our knowledge the true murderer of our chief judge." So there was no question among the people that Nephi had made a miraculous prophecy. And so it followed that his prophecy of destruction, if they didn't repent, was also true, and more importantly, that the Son of God would soon visit the earth. So everyone accepted him, repented, and lived righteously ever after, right? Not really. Here's verse 1 of chapter 10. "And it came to pass that there arose a division among the people, insomuch that they divided hither and thither, and went their ways, leaving Nephi alone, as he was standing in the midst of them. He walked home alone, pondering what had just happened and feeling very discouraged about his people. As he walked, God's voice came to him. "Blessed art thou, Nephi, for those things which thou hast done. For I have beheld how thou hast with unwearyingness declared the word, which I have given unto thee, unto this people. For thou hast not feared them, and hast not sought thine own life, but hast sought my will and to keep my commandments." God continued by promising that because of Nephi's faithfulness, whatever Nephi would say would come to pass. "For thou shalt not ask that which is contrary to my will. Whatsoever Nephi sealed on earth would be sealed in heaven." God, in short, was making Nephi his deputy. A deputy is the term for someone given power to act in the place of another, or, quote, an assistant exercising full authority in the absence of his or her superior. God explained to Nephi that he had power to rend temples in twain, to make mountains smooth. Whatever Nephi commanded would happen, just as if God had commanded it. Think about that. What would you do if God made that promise to you? It might not be as great as you think. Here's verse 6. "Behold, I declare it unto thee in the presence of mine angels, that ye shall have power over this people, and shall smite the earth with famine and with pestilence and destruction, according to the wickedness of this people." It's one thing to stand on your tower and warn people of imminent destruction, but it's quite another thing to be the person responsible for lighting the actual fuse. Prophets typically pray for God to spare their people. Abraham, for example, prayed in Genesis 18 for God to spare Sodom if he could find only 10 righteous people. How must Nephi have felt knowing that he was tasked with carrying out the punishment that he had promised? After being tasked with smiting the people, Nephi did not even go home. He immediately began warning them. But if he expected his miraculous revealing of the chief judge's murderer to change their attitude, he was mistaken. "Behold, they did still harden their hearts and would not hearken unto his words. Therefore they did revile against him and did seek to lay their hands upon him that they might cast him into prison." This is a good example of people knowing that what they are doing is wrong and defiantly continuing to do it. But Nephi was protected from the crowds and continued preaching. But it was of no use. There began to be contentions among the people, and they began to kill one another with the sword. We might learn a couple of things from this incident. First, people will do what they want to do. If the prophet says something they don't like, they'll ignore him, even if he proves that he's a prophet. Second, having God's power may not be all it's cracked up to be. I've heard people talk about all the amazing things that they would love to do, but instead of that, Nephi had to use God's power to smite the people he loved with destruction. And now for the trivia question. What happened to Nephi's brother Lehi? Did he leave the faith? Did he remain faithful? The question is answered in Helaman 11, verse 19. After spending a verse talking about Nephi being a great prophet, Mormon, the narrator, says this, "And behold, Lehi, his brother, was not a whit behind him as to things pertaining to righteousness." So even though Nephi was the star of the show, could make prophecies, had God's power, his brother Lehi was just as righteous as he was. And I suspect that there's a lot of people who fall into that category of being just as righteous as someone who has a more visible position. And that's all I've got. I would love to hear your comments. Feel free to weigh in on the discussion. If you're not subscribed and you've lasted this far, you probably should. And we will see you next time.